Chapter 2, The Will to Survive. One of my good friends was the head of the SEER program at Offutt Air Force Base for several years. SEER is the Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape program. And he helped out quite a bit with this course. And one of the stories that he told is so important that I'm including it right now. See, back in the 80s, there was an incident where an F-16 pilot needed to make an emergency landing. And he landed at an abandoned airstrip in Alaska. He landed perfectly. The plane was unharmed and he was fine. Unfortunately, he thought that his distress signal did not get out, and he gave up, pulled out his gun, and shot himself. They estimate that he did this within 30 minutes of landing. Help arrived within 2 hours of the initial distress call, which would have been well before his water and food or any other supplies ran out. And unfortunately, this is a common story. In wilderness situations, people often die after a single night of quote-unquote exposure at 50 to 60 degrees, even when they have proper clothing and supplies and really have no reason to die. Soldiers who have watched too many movies have died in Iraq and Afghanistan after receiving otherwise non-lethal injuries, just because in their mind they think, if I've been shot, I'm dead.
On the other hand, one of the more amusing survival stories is of a gentleman who crashed his plane in a desert area and survived for almost a week in extreme heat and cold with almost no supplies, no skills, no food, and no water. What was the driving force for his survival? He was in the middle of a divorce and simply refused to die and let his wife get everything.
It was very simple, but it was a driving force for him, and it allowed him to survive. It allowed his mind to keep going and never, ever, ever give up. The point of this is that the mind is a very powerful tool, and it will either be your worst enemy or your most valuable tool in a survival situation. Now, there's two easy steps you can take to make your mind work for you rather than against you. The first one is that you must choose to have a positive mental attitude regardless of the situation you're in. And second of all, you need to have something bigger than yourself to live for. Now, entire books have been written on this topic, and if you want some suggestions of authors and books that I found particularly helpful, please email me and let me know. To be honest, this was an area that I had to address myself when I started going through the process of fixing my survival plan. I was so focused on the bad political, economic, and global social events that were going on that I'd stopped practicing the discipline of thinking positively, regardless of the situation. In short, if you haven't already, you need to make a discipline of thinking positively. Now, this doesn't mean that you walk around with rose-colored glasses on or ignore reality, but it does mean that you control your mind. You still need to acknowledge when problems exist, but focus on finding solutions and what it will feel like to have successfully navigated the situation. There's a famous saying, "Who by worrying could add a single hour to his life?" And it's very true, and it has been in the 2,000 years since it was written. Over the last few years, many people have been worried about a flu pandemic of one sort or another. Now, how does worrying about it help you, regardless of whether or not it actually happens? How does worrying hurt you? Well, besides affecting your brain chemistry negatively, hurting your ability to sleep, making you depressing to be around, and increasing blood pressure, it wastes time. A better approach is to only concern your mind with the things that you have control over. As an example, you have no control on whether or not there is a global flu pandemic. You do have control over how you are or are not going to respond if it becomes a reality and affects you. Identify the threat, figure out your plan, and move on. By going through this course, you're going to do just that. Create logical responses to potential threats so that you don't have to waste your life worrying about things that may or may not happen. You'll address them head on once, write out your plan for dealing with them, and then go on living your life. Now, you're going to need to have something bigger than yourself that keeps you moving forward. Take a few seconds right now and imagine a Mad Max scenario with me. And while I don't know if we'll ever see a time like that, it provides a good mental image for this exercise. So, you're in Mad Max world, and it's tough. You've lost friends and loved ones. You don't have AC, a bed, or showers, or any other creature comforts, let alone food or clean water, and your time is divided between avoiding danger and providing basic necessities. Now, why would you keep going? Wouldn't it be easier to just roll over and quit? Of course not. But you have to train your mind to believe this. And the earlier you start telling your mind why it needs to keep going in hard times, the better it will respond when the time actually comes. So what are your reasons? God? Family? Creating a safe place for your children to grow up in? Some cause? For myself, it's that I want to do more for God and that I want to protect and spend more years with my wife and son. I've got other things that are important to me. Friends, relatives, the concept of liberty, etc. But God, my wife, and son are three things that I would choose over all others, including myself. The point is that they have to touch you emotionally at a deep level and need to be things that are worth going through pain to protect and preserve. Now, I want you to complete an exercise, and basically, I want you to complete the following sentences for as many items as you honestly can. They're quite simple. They are, I would walk through fire 4, and I would walk through fire 2. And the I would walk through fire 4 questions, or sentences, are for people, and the I would walk through fire 2 sentences are for causes. So, I would walk through fire for my wife, or I would walk through fire to preserve the United States. Whatever it may be, it's going to be different from person to person. If you need to, reread the course description at surviveinplace.com. As you go through it, some sections will resonate with you and cause you to think of the people and causes that you would walk through fire for. Please make sure and complete this exercise. It will not only help you in a survival situation, but by identifying what is most important to you now, it will help you complete this course and successfully put your survival plan in place. It might also cause you to make some major life changes, like moving closer to family or finding a job where you work less than you do now, or in an area that you're more passionate about. Communicating with family during an emergency. In a very strange way, people were much more mentally prepared for communication breakdowns before cell phones became popular. If you look around any public area, you'll probably see half of the people around you with a phone up to their ear, and most of the rest will have a phone in their lap, on their waist, or a visible Bluetooth headpiece. 15 years ago, if any of your relatives wanted to get a hold of you, they'd just have to wait until you were at home or at your office. Now they expect to be able to reach you immediately, and not being able to reach a friend or a loved one quickly can be a cause for panic. 15 years ago, I actually knew the numbers of my family and friends. I didn't have speed dial, and I could call everyone who was important to me from any phone. I had a few numbers written down, and sometimes carried a day planner with the rest of my numbers. But in those days, I could fall in a pool without losing all of my important numbers. In an emergency situation, I could get soaked by a fire sprinkler system and still find a phone and call my relatives to coordinate a time and place to meet up. 6 months ago, I realized this had changed. I carried numbers in my wallet, but I didn't know my own home phone number or any of my family members' cell phone numbers. I didn't have to because they were all in my phone. But what that meant is that if my phone died or didn't work in an emergency, I couldn't get in touch with any of them. My wife and I both carry a business card that we printed out on our printer using Avery printer card stock. It's actually Avery 8878. They have our basic information, our name, blood type, medical information on them, along with key phone numbers. This allows me to have a written backup for the key numbers I would need in an emergency, and it's easy to occasionally pull out the card and refresh my memory on the key numbers. Since the realization that I didn't actually know my important numbers anymore, I've started taking this card out and occasionally memorizing the information on it. Now, one of the things I want you to do this week is to write or type your important information and contact numbers on a business card, and start carrying it with you and memorize the information on it. If you can, print it out on water-resistant stock, the Avery 8878, but it's really important that you don't wait to take this step. If you need to, use an old business card of yours or someone else's and simply write on the back of it until you have the waterproof business card paper to use. When not to call after an emergency. Recently, when I was in San Francisco for a, lack of a better term, a geek conference, I learned a valuable lesson about how cell phones work during emergencies. I was downtown at the Moscone Center with about 20,000 other geeks, and it seemed like at least a third of the room had iPhones. My phone was working fine initially, and then I couldn't get email or browse the internet anymore. Then, when lunchtime came around, I couldn't get any of my friends on the phone, even though text messaging worked. The phones worked sporadically throughout the rest of the day. If I was able to connect with anyone, we'd lose the call within seconds, even with a strong signal. Curious, that night I called AT&T and found out that the sheer concentration of data-enabled phones being used for our conference caused the closest cell tower to overheat. This put more of a load on the surrounding towers, and they started crashing like dominoes. By the time AT&T had the problem identified and figured out, 7 towers had burnt out circuitry, and text messages were the only traffic that were getting through during the day for the next 2 days. I researched this more when I got home and found out that this also happened at a recent Apple conference, and it happened in New York on September 11th. Now, the urban legend is that BlackBerries are the only phones that work in a disaster. And while it's correct that BlackBerries worked on September 11th, the complete truth is that the network that BlackBerries communicated on was the only one working. BlackBerries now use the same network as other phones, and texting is the best way to communicate when calls won't go through. The lesson here is that if you find yourself in an emergency situation and start losing calls, stop trying to make the calls and switch over to just texting. You'll save your battery, and most likely you'll be able to communicate quicker than calling. Common long-distance contacts. There have been some recent disasters in the U.S., hurricanes, tornadoes, and floods, where the phone lines were so loaded that local calls could not be completed. Even so, long-distance calls still went through. The takeaway here is to have a primary, secondary, and tertiary person that each family member can call or text in the event of an emergency who lives in another area code than you do. Everyone in the family can call into these numbers, leave and retrieve messages, and communicate their location and situation. The next thing we're going to talk about is a prioritized list of stuff to buy. On the resource page for Lesson 2, I've included a link to a spreadsheet template that you can use to start keeping track of your purchases that you want to make, their cost, and their priority. There are 2 major reasons for taking this step. Number 1, it will help you take care of needs before wants, and number 2, it will help you save money. This simple trick alone can save people hundreds, if not thousands. Now, since you don't know when a local, regional, or national emergency will happen, buying survival items in the wrong order could leave you with some major gaps in your plan.
As an example, let's say you're at Costco and you see a generator that you really want, and it's on sale for $100 off. That's great, but fortunately you remember that you only have 72 hours of emergency food. It's pretty obvious in this case that the money would be better spent on Costco's 275-meal bucket of food that they sell for $85. If you don't have a prioritized list that you've thought through of survival items that you need and want, you're going to end up with a mishmash of survival supplies with some very elementary gaps. My personal prioritized list is based on categories and goes like this. The first category is shelter. Tarps, foil blankets, tents, sleeping bags, etc. The second one is water. Boxed water, bottled water, iodine tablets, chlorine, boiling, filters, and purifiers. The third category is fire. Matches, lighters, lenses, flint and magnesium, high-speed tools, and skills to make fire. The fourth category is food. What's in the cupboard, stored food, and self-reliant sources. And number 5 is medical, including prescriptions necessary for survival. After these big items are taken care of, then take care of the following. Security, like dogs, weapons, skills, training, and alarms. Communications, like wireless, wired, local, and extended range communications. Extra clothing, comfort, and barter items, like cash, gold, silver, .22 caliber bullets, cigarettes, liquor, Imodium, and iodine tablets. What I encourage you to do is to create a list of all the stuff that you want to buy. Next, go through it and designate whether or not it's something that you absolutely need or something that you just want. For right now, just put in the items that come to mind immediately and print it out. You'll find that you're continually adding to it, reprioritizing, and changing what you want as you do more research and do more. It's fine to make most changes in writing and only occasionally update the spreadsheet version. Also, put in a time component. In other words, figure out what you would need to survive for 72 hours in each of the 5 categories above. This can be taken care of very inexpensively. Next, go back through the five categories, but this time, figure out what you'd need to survive for 7 days. Then extend it to 6 months or 12 months. What you'll end up with for food is multiple items, like this. Item number one might be survival food for 72 hours. Item two might be survival food for 6 months. And item three could be 6 months' supply of food that we currently eat. In this instance, you could first get your fast and light survival food, then get a 6 month supply of rice, beans, and oatmeal, and finally start buying double of the foods you buy now. We'll cover food storage in a future lesson, but the strategy of combining what you currently eat with food storage has several advantages over simply going out and buying a pallet of survival food. You can download your template by going to surviveinplace.com/spreadsheet and export it as the appropriate format for your spreadsheet software. As a note, XLS works for Microsoft Excel. Or you can save it to your online Google Docs account if you have one. If you have your prioritized list filled out, send it to me at david@surviveinplace.com. Occasionally, I'll pick one, personally review it, and make recommendations on it. When I do, I'll post it on the site so everyone can benefit from it.
Insulin, heart medication, and pain meds. Since we're addressing real-life scenarios, let's take a look at medical conditions. If you have a medical condition that requires you to take medication multiple times a day in order to survive, you're going to want to consider getting a prescription for 3 to 6 months from your doctor and buying the medication with your own money. Now, I realize this will be prohibitively expensive with some medications, but it's an issue that you need to address. If you absolutely have to have a particular medication every day, or you'll die, or stop functioning within a week, then it doesn't make sense to purchase survival supplies at a faster pace than you're stocking up on your medication. In other words, don't go out and buy a year's worth of food if you only have a week's worth of medication that you need to survive. It just doesn't make sense. You can use that money on fun or vacations if you don't want to go out and buy the medication, but don't waste it on survival supplies that you aren't going to survive to use. Another alternative is to go to Chicago and visit a friend of mine named Joe Mercola. His website is naturalhealthcenter.mercola.com. That's M-E-R-C-O-L-A. In most cases, he can show you how to change your diet and adjust your supplements so that you can safely get off as many medications as possible. Their approach is unique, it's worth checking out, and it works on all sorts of different conditions, from mental health issues to heart issues to cholesterol to diabetes. It's really amazing what they're able to do with natural substances as opposed to prescriptions that it may be difficult or prohibitively expensive to get an extended supply for. Now, getting back to the prioritized survival list, a second major advantage is that when you see sales and specials, you'll know whether or not they're a good deal, and you'll be able to make quick decisions. Just like using a grocery list when you go to the store, you'll also find that you buy more of what you need and less of what you don't. Next, we're going to talk about this week's big exercise. And this week's big exercise involves turning off your water and power for an evening. It will be eye-opening for some and old hat for others. Now, I grew up on a farm in tornado and blizzard country and have lived through a few tornadoes and several multi-day blizzards. In fact, we normally had at least one 3 to 7 day storm each winter that isolated us and knocked out our power. And if you live in a similar area, I still encourage you to do this exercise if for no other reason than it's actually fun. But there's three parts to the exercise. Number one is learning how to shut off your utilities. Number two is preparing your freezer for power outages. And number three is the actual exercise. If you don't have access to your utilities because you're renting, live in a high rise, etc., then turn off everything that you can and find out what you could turn off if there was a situation where you needed to. As an example, if you live in an apartment and there was a major gas leak, you might want to turn off the master breaker as you're evacuating the building. I need to tell you that you are responsible for your actions and that I can't be held liable for anything that you do. Electricity, gas, and water can be very dangerous. that can damage your valuables, destroy your house, or kill you if you do anything wrong while working with them. Please consult your local expert before doing anything with water, electricity, gas, or really before doing anything suggested in this training. After you've consulted with your local experts, make sure you know how to turn off your electricity, water, and gas if you have it. The process will be different depending on whether or not you get your power from a utility company, are off the grid, have municipal water or well water, and whether you use gas, oil, or propane. If you use natural gas, I suggest that you don't turn it off, as this can create a dangerous situation with some systems, and you may have to relight the pilot lights on your appliances. Do make sure that you know how to turn it off and that you have a tool to do so. You don't need a specialized one. You can use a pair of pliers or a crescent wrench or pretty much any kind of locks. You might even want to turn off your gas shutoff valve just an eighth of a turn to make sure that it's not stuck. Again, if you don't know what you're doing with gas, please consult someone who does. Water. If you don't have a water shutoff where your plumbing enters your house, you may need a water shutoff T-wrench or water meter key to shut it off. They range from a couple of feet long to 10 feet long, depending on how deeply it freezes where you live. You can get them at your local hardware store, and they usually cost less than $20. Ask someone at your hardware store to demonstrate how to use it. It's very easy. Part two of the exercise is preparing your freezer. Now, this is really important. A full freezer will keep meat frozen for approximately 2 days if it's full, but only 1 day if it's partially full. Now, your freezer is going to be more efficient when it's full because it's less affected by frequent openings and closings. What we do to take advantage of this is take plastic water bottles, just regular bottles from the store, and put them in our freezer. If you don't know whether or not a particular bottle will break or leak when frozen, just put it in a plastic bag before you put it in the freezer. Now, doing this is particularly nice in the summer. When we go for a drive or a hike, we just reach in the freezer and grab one of these frozen bottles and replace it with a warm one. We use them as ice blocks and have the added bonus of nice cold water to drink as the ice melts. A couple other alternatives to water bottles are to use Nalgene bottles that are filled 3/4 full so that they don't break as the ice expands, ice cube trays, or a household plastic pitcher filled part way. Now, a lot of people want to know how much water they should put in their freezer, and it really depends on how full your freezer is. Since the purpose of the water is to keep the freezer cold longer in the event of a power outage, you don't need to put any in if you already have a full freezer. Also, if you don't have anything in your freezer that will spoil if it warms up, then you don't really need to put any water in, although it's not a bad place to store water. Okay, here's part three. Jump in and do it. Pick one of the next few nights and turn off your electricity and water for the evening. If you've got kids at home, go ahead and make it a fun event. Call it family game night or camping at home or any other creative name that you come up with. Remember, most survival preparations are pretty darn fun. Even though they're practical, they could save your life, but they're fun to do. They're fun to practice. Here's why this is important. If you're going to put your faith in a plan to survive for 3, 6, or 12 months, you better make darn sure that it works for a single evening. By going through this simple exercise, you'll find out several important things. Do you know how to cook without a stove? Does your emergency stove work? If you don't cook, are your emergency rations edible? Do they agree with your system? Do your lamps and lanterns really light a room so that you can read or play games? Do they stink too much because of wicks being too long or the fuels that you're using to use anywhere other than camping? Make sure to write down what works and what doesn't work. In particular, pay attention to toilet and hygiene issues, food, cooking, light, and games and activities. Here's some helpful hints for this exercise. Pick an evening when your entire family will be home. Number two, you may have to do some creative negotiating with your family to buy into this exercise, and a Friday or Saturday night may be the only night that will work. Number three, start at 5 p.m. or whenever everyone is home. Number four, end as late as possible. If you have battery-powered alarm clocks, you can even wait until morning. Number five, don't use your gas appliances, just as an exercise. And number six, turn off your phones, laptops, iPods, game systems, etc. And just an FYI, cordless phones will not work without power. Now, you may very well find the silence of a powered down house to be very relaxing, especially if you have ADD. It also means more distraction-free time with your family. With no electronic noise, you can actually talk to each other, enjoy games, and read books. Now, I've also got a small assignment for you this week. As you're traveling around, make a written note of the following: concentrations of graffiti or gang activity, streets, roads, or intersections that get congested easily, railroad tracks, hazardous cargo routes on highways and interstates, locations of chemical plants, refineries, and fuel storage, and other threats and dangers in your area. Next week, we'll go into this in more detail, and I'll show you how to find more of this information online. We'll add it to your map so that you can have a strategic view of your city. Here's a review of this week's assignments. Complete the following sentences for as many items as you honestly can. I would walk through Fire 4, and I would walk through Fire 2. Make sure and put the written list in your Survive in Place plan. Second, write or type your important information and contact numbers on a business card. Start carrying it with you and review it often so that you will eventually memorize it. Print it out on water-resistant stock, if possible, like Avery 8878, but really don't wait to take this step. Use an old business card of yours or someone else's and simply write on the back of it until you have business card paper to use. Number three, create your prioritized list of survival items to buy or trade for. Put the written list in your Survive in Place plan. Number four, make sure you can turn off your utilities. Number five, add water bottles to your freezer. Six, spend an evening and or night with the utilities turned off. Write down what worked well and what issues you need to figure out before spending 72 hours without utilities. And number seven, start writing down potential dangers and congestion areas for your area. Now, we've got a resource page for this lesson, and you can find it at urbansurvivalplan.com/592. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk next week.